morning, Chairperson, members and guests. We received apologies from Mr. Kwankwa and Mr. Sheikh Imam. They are both away on oversight visits with the portfolio committees. Ms. Nglangwini is on family responsibility, and then the researcher, Musa Samisa, is not feeling well, so we will not be able to make it. Thank you. We'll note those apologies. Director General, you are all yours.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members, good morning. Can I request that I move to this chair? It's a bit uncomfortable.
Please make sure you are comfortable dealing with an uncomfortable topic.
No, Chair, this topic is very, I'm very comfortable with the topic. It's a topic that, Chair, you may know, we've presented in this very same room. We indicated to the committees the last time around when we did the appropriation bill that we will be coming with a special appropriation bill, and this is the day. In particular, the special appropriation bill for ESCOM that we request Parliament to consider an extra allocation to the entity of about 26 billion. But let me take the committee through the background. Slide number two there. We basically are saying that ESCOM is vital to the economy in many ways. And we all know that recently they have experienced financial and operational challenges. And it's been a while that, and we are of the view that if you don't fix ESCOM, if you don't support ESCOM in any way, the system has got a potential to clog. I was told by some professor some time ago who said, you know, when New York got a blackout, it took a long time for it to, in the early days, because of the power challenges and cuts then, it took a long time, and there was a direct impact in the economy of New York as a city. So, and this professor is saying, if ESCOM, for instance, has to collapse in terms of keeping the lights on, it may be detrimental for South Africa, and not only South Africa, but also for Africa as a whole. So you are simply saying it's important that you must ensure that ESCOM is strong and sustainable in a way that it supports economic development and its effect. That I think should underlie the approach and the discussion. They've got high levels of debt currently and unsustainable debt, and also some liquidity challenges. And it is for that reason that the President in the State of the Nation address some time ago mentioned the importance of ESCOM's business model and capital structure changing. And to an extent, he went further by even suggesting that we should have a totally different business model that breaks ESCOM into three. So all of that is in the mix of trying to see where ESCOM is currently, where ESCOM should be, and what it takes for us to take to ESCOM where it should be. The liquidity challenges resulted in them, obviously, you know, there are declines in sales, there are low deterioration determinations from the approvals from NERSA, as you know by now. The primary energy and employee benefit costs are increasing by the day, and there are continuing escalations of the new bill program due to delays. So all of these challenges are putting ESCOM's situation and financial ratios in a very tight and difficult situation. Now, how is ESCOM sustaining itself? It has to borrow increasing amounts not only to service debt, but also to keep its operations alive. And this is unsustainable in any way. Slide number four. They also have challenges in raising required funding due to lenders' concern about its future sustainability. And there's uncertainty that is kept in the system because it's not sure where government restructuring plan is going, and I'll talk about that in a while. And there's also lack of policy clarity direction on the energy sector as a whole. So now, if you look at all of these three factors, which obviously government is engaged with and dealing with that thing at various levels and various paces of the state, the various stages in terms of the development of addressing these three broad issues, it's important to realize that there's agency needed on our side. There's also failure to manage short-term liquidity, it will result in ESCOM failing on debt repayment. This for us is an important thing because it can then call it can result in a possible call on government guaranteed debt. They currently have 420 billion rand worth of debt, almost 250 billion plus of that is guaranteed. And you can imagine if they are able to service their debt, the fear is there might be a call on the guarantee. So it is important that ESCOM's liquidity position has to be improved so that they are able to secure all identified funding initiatives. Now, ESCOM has got a funding plan that they agree and come up with at the beginning, meaning funding plan simply means how much are they going to get from tariffs, how much are they going to get through raising bonds, how much are they going to get through various lending that they will do, and borrowing that they do. So all of that informs the funding plan. Now, if one of the legs in the funding plan is not met, it is then a challenge. So that's when we think government comes in, because we're coming in because the funding plan is not effectively implemented, meaning that they cannot go into the market, they cannot raise money, or if they have to raise it, it becomes very expensive. But on one hand, what we also know as government is that there is clear need for the shareholder, in this case government, to pump in resources like any other business. When need be, shareholders should various level of pumping money. So there's also that realization that at some point government as a shareholder has to pump in money to keep not only to keep the operations but also for ESCOM to actually as a business reposition itself. So, and it's for various reasons that liquidity or funding or fuel injection of some kind is necessary. Now, given lower tariff determination by NERSA and slower implementation of cost-saving measures, projected revenues will not adequately cover the interest payment, debt payment, and capital expenditure requirement. Now, think about it. If interest payment, debt repayment, and capital all in one are not being able to be met because of the revenue stream, then we have a problem in the form of ESCOM. And that's where we are with the ESCOM. So other than that, you then have to look at the expenditure side. Expenditure will mean ESCOM's cost containment measures should be put in place, and they should definitely we should enforce it on them to ensure that they meet certain obligations around ensuring that they contain costs at all costs. Now, primary costs, overheads, recurring costs, staff costs, all of those things have to be looked at as one. It's for this reason that we decided then finally to say we should then, in the meantime, whilst addressing ESCOM's challenges, whether you're looking at debt, whether you're looking at its liquidity, whether you're looking at its capital program, that in the meantime, we should get financial assistance of some kind. Now, in February, Minister of Finance announced in the budget, I'm in slide number 5, that 23 billion should be put, 69 billion over 3 years, 100 billion over 10 years. So 230 billion over 10 years. That's what we said in February. And the amounts allocated were intended to enable the city to service debt, that's what we said again in February, and meet redemption requirements, while making resources available for urgent operational improvement. It was also anticipated at the time of the tariff shortfalls in capital expenditure of ESCOM that this can result in the envisaged money being disbursed around October 2019 as per the normal process. As you know, the appropriation bill was only recently signed into law by the President, meaning that the authority to spend is granted of the 1920 budget. And this approach was partly premised on assumption that Eskom will continue to raising required funding between February and October this year. Hence, this bill, at the time of the budget, we did not even anticipate that we will have to give Eskom extra 29 billion, extra 26 billion, because we had only made 23 billion available. Honourable members will remember that at some point we had to ignite Section 16 of the Public Finance Management Act because of the challenges that they were experiencing. And that's why we made 17.6 billion available before October 2019, when normal disbursements would have happened, that on an urgent basis we had to make money available. And all this was as a result of the challenges that they were experiencing, because we were afraid at the time that they would not be able to honor their obligations. And the impact thereof would have been very negative. I just finished slide 6, I'm at slide 7 now. Today we have transferred 13.5 to Eskom, approved under Section 16. Disbursements of the remaining 4 billion will be in terms of Eskom's cash flow requirements, and the remaining part of the 23 billion may be disbursed following an enactment of Appropriation Act for 1920 financial year. We continue to work closely with public enterprises, Department of Public Enterprises, and the Eskom's treasury to monitor their daily cash flow requirements and financial position. Because if we don't do that, we then stand the chance of being surprised once more when Eskom is not able to actually fulfill the obligations and the management of their finances. In the June 2019 State of the Nation, the President announced that a special appropriation will be tabled. And then, and this is what it is. On June 19, Cabinet approved additional funding allocation to Eskom for 1920 and 2021 to assist company challenges, and this is exactly what I said earlier on. And that on the 23rd of July, we tabled this special appropriation bill in Parliament in order now to make formal the extra allocation. This bill that is in front of you proposed the following additional support. One, additional 23 billion in 1920 financial year and 33 billion in 2021 financial year. Now it's over 2 years, meaning it's additional 10 billion rand more to next year. Why are we doing that now? We are doing that now because in terms of Eskom's cash requirements and cash flow requirements, they will then need an allocation before the beginning of next financial year, if I'm right. So yeah, before the next appropriation bill is finalized. So the idea is that we are front-loading 2021, the 33, meaning 23 that would have come in anyway in 2021, including the 10 billion. We are developing, as you can imagine, on our members, we cannot be free for all. We cannot be Father Christmas or Mother Christmas or Uncle Christmas as government to state-owned companies that are not able to manage their affairs properly. We have to develop conditions and we have to impose them during and after the transfers have been made. The financial support also addresses going concern, which enables external auditors to sign off Eskom's annual financial statements of going concern. If we did not do this, and you know, this is quite, let me spend a little bit of time explaining this bullet number 3. If Eskom's auditors cannot sign off Eskom as a going concern, or secondly, if Eskom for some reason get a qualification, that in itself is a trigger for lenders to demand of their money, because how then do you carry on, and it's built into the loan agreement of some of the people who owe Eskom, the 450 billion rand of 420 billion rand. Part of those agreements built into this kind of conditions that Eskom should, at all material instances, be a going concern. Eskom should be a business, should be, you know, if they get any qualification. Last year, 2 years ago, when Eskom got a qualification, you remember that entities like the French Development Agency, entities like the Development Bank South Africa, and some lenders were almost on the verge of exercising their rights as per the loan agreement. That says, if Eskom get a qualification, then we should get our money because we don't trust that our money is safe. And then the guarantee then can be ignited. So we, as we approach Eskom's challenges, we look at all aspects based on what the requirements are in law, in the agreements that have been written, also in terms of the conditions that we have to impose. Some of them obviously would be solved and we would, it's things like get rid, for instance, of the Eskom finance company. There's a finance company there that's not caught to the operations of Eskom. All that you must do, and all that you'll be saying to Eskom, sell this loan book to somebody so that we can recoup and then let those people who are managing entities like that, banks and so on, and interest rates, because Eskom is not in the business of doing that. So those would be some of the conditions that says, you know, trim your operations, reduce your coal costs, reduce many, many other overheads that you may be experiencing. We should also note that this financial support that we are proposing, the 46 billion, is also based on Eskom's ability to execute its funding strategy and funding plan that I mentioned earlier. Okay? And we have been told by Eskom that 58% of the funding requirements for this financial year has already been secured, meaning over and above tariff revenues and other revenues, they were able also, based on the funding plan, to have reached by now 58% of their target. And what we are emphasizing is the last bullet there, and we have to take note of this as we carry on in supporting Eskom, is that failure to execute funding plan may result in Eskom experiencing liquidity shortfall by the 31st of March 2020. And this will trigger a requirement that additional funding, in addition to the funding provided through the special appropriation. So this bullet is an important point that must be considered by all stakeholders. Government, Eskom employees, Eskom management, Eskom board, South Africans as a whole, including Parliament. That says, if they fail to execute their funding plan by 31st of March, meaning if they are not able to reach their 100% funding plan, that means we may have to require additional funding in addition to the appropriation that we are requesting. So we're just putting it out there so that we get everyone to note that they may, if they are not able to meet their funding plan. Now, the funding plan, and this is what we are saying to Eskom, and this is what we should continue saying to Eskom. And maybe if need be, Eskom at some point should answer and come to the party on this thing. That if it cannot be on the revenue side, on the funding side, it cannot only be that Uncle Christmas or Father Christmas, as I said, or Dr. Christmas can just pump in money. It cannot be that. There has to be obligations imposed on Eskom on the cost side to actually meet certain targets in order for Eskom to reduce its cost. Cost reduction, like any entity in the state or in a department, can come in many forms. The labor cost leaves much to be desired in Eskom, and that must be addressed, and we have to face that head on. The operational cost must be faced head on. We must be creative in the way that we approach Eskom. Our chair, maybe to give you it a little bit, as the DG of the Treasury, I was a bit naughty about a month ago. Deliberately so, but it's important that we face issues head on, and Eskom must do the same. I was noting that I said in public that maybe government employees should consider, or we should go to unions and plead with unions as government to say the cost of employees is too much, we should actually reduce it by 10%. That's what we created a discussion and a public discussion. One can argue that it was inappropriate, yes, no, but the reality is that we cannot not say the same about Eskom. If we want to maintain the number of employees in Eskom in cutting this cake, and we want to keep the numbers intact, then each one must get a smaller slice in the cake, so that everyone must enjoy. And this is a tough conversation that we must engage with as we engage and continue funding Eskom from the purse and from the resources of the state. Because this is all tax revenues. If an executive in Eskom is earning 2 million today, can that executive earn 1.8 million tomorrow? I'm not talking low-level employees who anyway will have harsh conditions that they must deal with, transport and others. I'm dealing here, I'm talking, Chair, with due respect to where areas of cuts can be exercised, including salary cuts, and change the way we do business in Eskom. So it's a plea that we'll, as Treasurer, will continue making on Eskom. We'll continue making that plea in our discussions with the Department of Public Enterprises on Eskom matters and other state-owned company matters, because it cannot be business as usual when clearly we don't have resources at our disposal, when clearly our economy is not doing well, when clearly tax revenues are not coming through for various reasons. So being hard on ourselves now so that we enjoy later should be what defines us as a nation and what defines the future of how state-owned companies are managed. If you look at the pay levels, and I'm not saying we are going to do that, but subject to discussion, and obviously I know what I'm saying is going to cause confusion further. If we are serious, we have to get into a debate that says, look at the pay levels of Eskom and pay levels of other state-owned companies, and categorize all the employees, junior, middle, senior, executive, board members, board fees, etc. The cost structures, the cost of coal, etc. It's important. And then we've been talking about a grand bargain, a social bargain of some kind among all players in South Africa. Business, one. If we have to take advantage of the statement I made at the beginning, the example I gave about New York, blackout in New York, vis-a-vis a blackout in South Africa and the impact in the country as a whole and the impact in the continent, maybe we must think about Eskom differently as business. Business should be saying, to keep it alive, we also are getting 30, 40, 50% profit. Maybe we must make some sacrifices, 10, 20% maybe, for a year or two. If the cost per ton is 700 per ton, rent 700, why can't it be 600 rents? So that we actually assist each other in ensuring that Eskom becomes sustainable tomorrow. Because then it talks about how much you pay in order to save. And you must be at one in terms of what kind of new Eskom do you want to see. That's business. So I'm calling for smaller profits in ensuring that we rebuild Eskom jointly. Government, we are already playing our part. We can do more. We are already proposing this special appropriation bill of 26. We've already proposed the 23 billion in February. We are already committed to the next 10 years. Maybe we need more. Labor, same. I already gave an example in my earlier. That's why I'm saying a social pact of all of us needed. Labor should be able to say various categories. Do we earn 100 rands today and earn 80 rands or 90 rands tomorrow? You must enter into a very difficult conversation. What sacrifices do you want to make? Not only the low earners, maybe. You can categorize them. Civil society, ordinary South Africans. Obviously, we have to pay the bills. We have to pay electricity. We have to stop tampering with the meters in our households. Maybe that's our own contribution. So, Chair, a grand compact of some kind is needed here in building. Now, finally, which is the last two slides, is that then government has to, we have to talk about what reconfiguration means in ESCOM. What kind of new ESCOM do we see? We saw the Minister of Public Enterprise announce the other day, the head of the Chief Restructuring Office, Freeman. They're doing some work. We are close to the process. They are responsible for developing this turnaround strategy. And we know that there's a paper that we all have to issue out and look at in September. And it will outline a roadmap where ESCOM is going. So I may not give you the details. I may not have the details because it is still being in the mill right now, where a clear roadmap must be shown, including how we're going to deal with ESCOM financial challenges and consolidate various processes that will have to give clarity in terms of the new ESCOM. So I may not, unfortunately, Chair, spend too much time on this slide because it's work in progress, and maybe at the appropriate time when the paper is available, we can take the committee through. But what I'm happy about is that there's finally realization that ESCOM cannot be the same tomorrow. It has to be a different ESCOM compared to the one that's there today. In conclusion, Chair, we have to ensure energy security at all costs, ensuring that there's economic growth and maintaining our global rating as a country. That's important. So restructuring, managing ESCOM's finance, and renewing reliance on fiscal support should be the hallmark of a new ESCOM. And we also realize and recognize that the failure to urgently strengthen ESCOM's balance sheet may be too detrimental and may have a negative impact, not only on ESCOM, but generally on the whole operations of ESCOM. And with this exposure that ESCOM has in terms of South Africa and the whole of government, it's critical that we support ESCOM. The Minister of Finance did indicate in the budget that giving money to some of these state-owned companies is like giving money, looking in a black dark hole and just throwing money. That may be the perception out there, but the reality with ESCOM is that finally we are at grips now, making sure that we are one in terms of ensuring that the capital structure changes. By capital structure, I mean that should loans exceed certain ratios, financial ratios, we have to relook at that. Business model simply says, is this the most optimal way in its current form? Is the way of reconfiguring ESCOM differently to maintain the mandate? I mean, to pass on or for ESCOM to fulfill its mandate. So these two things, they remain critical in the center of what this appropriation, special appropriation bill is about. We are requesting additional 26 billion. We are also saying there's a plan that's in place. There's a chief restructuring office established. A paper is going to be circulated in September. But in the meantime, we have to keep the lights on. In the meantime, I'm also finally saying ESCOM must be hard on itself in terms from a cost containment point of view, from a cost structure point of view, and that all grand bargain is needed from all of us, labor, business, civil society, government, for us to hold hands in rebuilding ESCOM to its former glory days, and because of the significance of this major entity on our economy. So, Chair, that's basically what we are putting up to the committee, and we therefore would request that the committee consider approving this special appropriation bill for it to be taken forward through the process in Parliament. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Here's the presentation. Can I hear the honourable members? What are our comments, our inputs, to try and progress the discussion between ourselves and the National Treasury at the moment? Can let me see the hands. One, two, 4, 5 in that or 6, 7. Yeah, yeah. Okay, let me see. I said yeah, 4. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the DG for a very sobering presentation. Chair, let me start with what was told to us during the main appropriation when the emergency appropriation for ESCOM was specialized, well, sorry, was formalized, as required by the PFMA. We were told that there would be conditions attached to that $16 billion that was given, $17 billion that was given over already. And we were told the minister would announce...
Can I just interrupt you, honourable members? It's just a short one. Yeah, you know, I like my preamble. Can you please be succinct, direct with our questions, with our inputs, so that we can have as many questions and input as possible, and we'll get to the second bite if needs be. Thank you.
Of course, Chair. So, no conditions were forthcoming from the previous main appropriation. None were announced. So I'm quite concerned to hear that we're going to be developing conditions now, but asking for the money to be approved at the end of September, Chair. So I'd like to know what conditions are being considered by National Treasury. And also, I think a very important question, Chair, is where is the funding actually coming from? Are we going to see an adjustment budget to the appropriation we've already passed that will be cutting costs elsewhere in governments or services? Are we issuing bonds? Are we going to the debt market to be able to find this amount to give ESCOM additional cash? And Chair, my last point is around slide number 3 around ESCOM's financial challenges. And I think it's a little bit problematic to say that there were low tariff determinations from NERSA. If you look at the period from 2007 to 2017, NERSA approved effectively 350% in tariff increases for ESCOM. In fact, in the last year, Chair, there was a 4.4% adjustment in October and a 9.41% adjustment now. Total in April, electricity prices went up 13.8%. So I think this is far above inflation, and it's been, in fact, NERSA's over the last decade has been trying to balance the needs of the people versus the needs of ESCOM on this front. And I think that we need to be honest if we're going to develop meaningful conditions about what the situation is at ESCOM and what the actual problems are. I mean, the president himself said that the challenges at ESCOM are massive cost overrun, the effects of state capture, as well as the collapse of governance structures. And we need to know if these conditions will include fixing up the governance structures, cleaning up procurement, and so on. I think it's critical, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to everybody. Thank you very much for the presentation. I was touched by the way you are thinking as to how we can assist ESCOM not to keep on asking money. I know it will be very difficult for those who are working at ESCOM to be told that we are thinking of looking even at your salary. It will be a painful thing, but if that can be taken into consideration, it will assist the company. I wanted to also know that the Honourable Member here asked the question as to where we are going to get the money in order to assist ESCOM. But in my mind, I was thinking of these monies that other departments really don't use. Sometimes they'll be given an allocation, and at the end of the day, they don't use that money. So I was thinking also of that one. And the other thing that I want to talk to is the financial challenge, where you're saying ESCOM now has to borrow increasing amounts to service its debt obligation, placing it in unsustainable position. And then now I'm thinking, normally when you get your pension fund, whatever you were investing or you have to get, it will via SARS. And SARS will take the money and pay your debt before they give you the remaining balance. So I know normally when you do our oversight visit with the municipalities, the main challenge that they're having is that they are owning ESCOM. And I know there's something that they normally get, the their allocation. I was thinking that why don't we follow that route that SARS is doing on us when we get our pension fund. You start by paying their debt and give them the change so that we don't always see Eskom coming to us requesting for another money or allocation to inject their whatever they want to use. Thank you.
Good morning, and thank you, DG, for the presentation. I just want to check to what is the plan that is being put in by Eskom? Because yes, there is a challenge; they need to be built out, but there should be a plan to sustain them. What is the plan that they are bringing forth so that they can be sustained, and so that we do not see them coming in year in and year out for asking for bailout? Because we should anticipate them being bailed out for some time, and then they should then start to be efficient themselves. I also want to speak to what are the conditions that is attached to the bailout that is being given to Eskom? Because we're giving Eskom so much money, and the DG has said there should be conditions attached. But I'm worried that the conditions would come after the bailout. I thought that there should be conditions attached to the bailout so that when we need to assist them further, we need to check the request vis-a-vis the conditions that was attached to or what was given to them. Did they comply to the conditions or what? Or what were the challenges, basically? And on the issue of the Eskom requesting the bailout now and then, I think it is also perpetuated by the department not paying Eskom. And I think this is the time that Eskom needs to be assisted, either by Parliament or whoever is relevant to can assist. Because in every presentation we would hear and find that there are departments that are still owing Eskom. There are municipalities who are still owing Eskom. Yet we are sitting here and we are saying Eskom is coming here for bailout. Eskom is coming here for bailout. But we forget that we are also equally to blame for Eskom's situation where they find themselves in. So I mean, I just want to check DG as to how would they be assisted to get the money that they are owed, particularly by the departments, government departments, so to say. Thank you very much.
Indications on where exactly we're going to.
But that as it may be, it's also important for us that you as Treasury could help us understand how much does municipalities owe ESCOM. You know, sometimes you hear about municipalities. A couple of years ago, there was always threat from ESCOM to sell off some of the municipalities. I remember that in one of the there was a town in one of the, I mean, in the Northern Cape, which ESCOM threatened to sell off, and the provincial government had to intervene to an extent of even declaring a Section 139 on that particular municipality, mainly because of the pressures from ESCOM. And I also would want to know whether there is, probably in your knowledge, a private sector key customers of ESCOM who are owing ESCOM. And the challenge here would be also to address those customers who owe ESCOM who are also suppliers or service providers to ESCOM. As much as we have, and I think it is still in place, DG, the decision to blacklist some of the companies that were shortchanging the government in the past. Equally so, we should actually expect government to blacklist some of these companies that are shortchanging the SOEs, because SOEs are equally a public entity. I mean, they are public entities and they are part of the state. They are delivery arms of the state. So I think it is important that we look at them in that way. But also, DG, is it possible that when we take into consideration what municipalities owe ESCOM, that we can then say during the debates and decisions about the division of revenue, you top slide already from the beginning. And also based on the projections of the municipalities, be able to anticipate the needs of those municipalities so that the ordinary people of South Africa, the local economies, as well as other services should not suffer. And in that way, truly become like an administrator of the finances of the municipalities, because they have proven that they cannot pay their debtors, they are not providing a certain services that they needed to provide, but in particular, they are not actually feeding the hand that lays the golden egg, which is ESCOM that needs to give them the energy so that they can then be able to make sure that the local economy is developed. The other one, Chairperson, I think. The DPE and ESCOM, when they come before us, they will then be able to give us indication on how much time the CRO will be given to develop the work plan. Because I see there is an indication in the presentation that around September, I don't know whether that September deadline for the roadmap is the roadmap also this plan, that the turnaround strategy, I'm a bit confused. Is the turnaround strategy the roadmap, and or is the roadmap also linked to the work of the CRO? So we need to look into that. The other one that I thought I need to bring up here, Chairperson, although we'll also again raise with DPE and ESCOM, is this issue of the primary energy. And I think one of the key issues that DG also raised was the matters related to, yeah, on slide, I don't know whether it's two or two, the issue of the financial challenges, where you talk about the low tariff determination by NERSA, the decline in sales, also the primary energy and employee benefits. I'm happy that when you talked about the employee issue, you differentiated between the executives as well as, because it's actually the executives that we must hold responsible for the challenges that ESCOM is facing. They are being remunerated for the value that they add because of what is in their grey matter. But the challenge we have is bigger than what we are actually giving to them. So I think the issue that you raised there about primary energy, the issue of fuel, or the fact that because the coal quantity is low, they then have to inject fuel to make it possible that the boilers can be able to generate the heat that needs to get the steam out into the turbines. So it's important that we look at those two areas. But when it comes to the coal contract, we are told that there's 90% of the coal contracts in ESCOM that are just given to two major companies. And those companies are still remaining with something like 23 years of the more than 40 years of contractual arrangement that they have. I think that it is those areas that the needs to be zoomed into. Because I don't think sometimes the South African private sector seem not to have, they are not patriotic, for the lack of a better word. Because you can't have a situation where you are a supplier of a major energy provider and you're milking this poor, emaciated cow so much that you can actually see that it doesn't even produce any milk anymore, but you believe that the remaining skin and bones will become milk. Because this 90% contract are actually the ones that are a sort of concern. If you have 90% of the contracts shared by two, and then 10% of the contracts shared by 60 small companies, it tells you there's something that is not right in the way in which the procurement processes in ESCOM is being done. So I would believe that the ESCOM will come and tell us. And these are some of the things that we actually need to put into those conditions, honorable members, that we need them to look into these particular primary energy issues. The other one is the matter which I would believe also would be part of the roadmap or part of the plan, would be the issue of whether as a country and through you, DG, you've been probably able to advise the Department and Ministry of Mineral Resources and Energy with regards to designation of our primary or our feedstock minerals to be strategic, so that we don't then end up taking the best coal out of. I mean, we want to make sure that the output of our ports or our harbors is actually geared at taking out the best coal that is supposed to actually make it possible that we generate the energy that our economy needs. So it is important that there is a particular type of percentage that can be attached to coal. I know that when we talk to environmental issues, the fact that we still talk about coal in South Africa becomes as if it's a sore point. But it cannot be. Right now, we still need to develop. We right now still have a lot of challenges. We've got our people in many parts of this country. I will never forget Chairperson Nomama World Club Uyalingana saying that I'm not going to be able to watch the World Cup because I'm not TV. As the former MEC for Economic Development, we were there for another political program. When she said that it is so painful that when you go and visit elsewhere, you can then even be able to read the Bible without spectacles. But in her place, she can't read her own Bible that she has had for so many years. So I think it is important that we give those people hope with this code. But we cannot give them hope when we've got these contracts that are forever in place that are milking this poor cow, and then the taxpayer must just keep on footing the bill. Because in essence, we have paid upfront for power generation in this country. We can equally, at another stage, call for all our households to be given some particular type of concession. But we can't do it now because The poor hen or the poor cow is so emaciated that it can't produce any milk anymore. So I think, Chairperson, that plan with conditions attached to the bailout is what we need as this committee prior to making a determination. I move that we take that approach, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just two things. Firstly, this bill needs to be considered, take into consideration the proposal that we are making as a committee, that we must, before proceeding further, we get ESCOM into, must come to close to us to talk very close on these issues. Secondly, is that I've heard you you're talking about announcement of considering cutting the salaries of workers with 10%, etc. I think it will be a very unstrategic move for now, because we can't create institutions of engagement and ignore them and bring them at this level. So I think it was not a strategic announcement at the public level, because you've got your NEDLAC and other institutions of engagement. So I think it shouldn't be made in future, such a announcement. In fact, there are many CEOs who are earning huge bonuses in some of these entities. Some, buyers, they increase their own bonuses, find it very easy. I think it should be one of the things that should be considered, that these huge bonuses in future, they could be used for these challenges. That's where you can look at. Now, I want to check on slide number 4, what there is a made mention of the other areas that are not of assistance to you, which is the uncertainty of government restructuring plan. Maybe if you can just unpack that. And lack of policy direction of energy sector. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the presentation by the DG. I want to start off by saying that at some stage, ESCOM has moved away from their mandate, or deviated from their mandate. But I know it's the 6th Parliament, and we weren't here in the previous 2 Parliaments. But my question is, I would be interested to see where National Treasury stand on this point. What was their report saying to ESCOM at the time? And I understand if in the good times of the economy, the state-owned entities have given themselves reasonable packages and bonuses, but we are all in the bad times of the economy now, so we all have to be direct and serious about it. So I would like to know from National Treasury to indicate when ESCOM arrived at that situation where they started to deviate. I mean, we have so many laws in place that, particularly from National Treasury, which we know manage the good governance model in our country. Where is that report and what was told to ESCOM at the time? Or were those people in ESCOM just ignored the government, or were the outside forces just too strong that were influenced to take the processes, that the political leadership, the ministers at the time, didn't act when the deviation started? I would like to know how much money is going to of this request for additional the additional funding to ESCOM, the bailout funding as we call it, is going to go to the maintenance and the infrastructure? Or is it when we approve this request to give ESCOM more money that it automatically is going to support these other different kind of bonuses, structures, performance bonuses that exist in ESCOM? Now we accept people get 13 paychecks, but I think over the years, in the good times, so many additional performance bonuses were added to the pay structure of state-owned entities, and we must review that. We must give people what they must get, what they deserve. But I think we have to be straightforward about where we are now. And also, DG, the fact that you come to us and you actually, on behalf of ESCOM, is asking an extra 10 billion rand, pushing it up to 33 billion in the 2021 financial year. It obviously, I expect then Treasury to speak to the minister and say, we need to do this with conditions, as the other members are saying. We can't, as you yourself say, just throw money. And I've heard some conditions that you alluded to, operations and how we're going to manage the debt and so on. But we need more concrete, I think, conditions from ESCOM, and I'm sure you will support it. My last point is, what is the projected income of ESCOM whilst we are giving this billions of rand to ESCOM? What is their own projected income, and as the members ask you, what is their own plan to recover, their own recovery strategic plan? And we heard about municipalities, but also the theft of electricity. I'm sure there's billions in that pool as well, and I'm not sure if ESCOM has the capacity to deal with that as well, because people must pay for electricity. That's what the president has said in his own name, and it's rightly so. And where people can't pay, there's other policies of government and municipalities to assist them. So I think in principle, you are right, DG, the crisis is there. It's a crisis, and we have to manage ourselves out of the crisis, not going along with all the reasons that ESCOM over the last few years have given us, or not actually the reasons, actually a gun is against our head. If you don't give this money, the lights will go off. And it's almost like it's a threatening statement. But I think we are all partners here for the same reason, is to take this country forward, to take the economy forward, to take our good governance model in terms of financial, which I know Treasury upholds over the years and have upheld it. To do so, we support that, but we need to agree to get ESCOM close to us, that we can talk about these conditions and how we as partners was going to manage this change, this necessary change that must happen in the next 2 or 3 years. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me join other members, Chairperson, to have fun saying. I will reserve some of the questions and comments for the day when DPE and ESCOM would be part of our meeting, wherein we should be raising some of the serious questions. However, Chairperson, one has to raise this, notwithstanding the fact that we are still at the head of this discussion, DG. The tail end is coming. Where we would be able to actually, you know, pronounce our view. However, Chairperson, I feel that we should, DG, indicate that there is a day and age when we as Parliament shall say, we are tired of being held to ransom by ESCOM. Perhaps a reactionary statement, Chair, could be that ESCOM is actually playing on emotional blackmail to South Africans. If you don't do it, this will happen. If Parliament doesn't approve, then we would be seen as a reactionary parliament.
But then I'm saying, Chair, there's a day when this statement would be clearly articulated, and I think in the near future. Chair, my question would be, this is mindful of what I just said, what is the percentage rate of escalation of the debt, if we could know? Because the reality is that the debt is actually in escalation. Without getting into the envisaged task of the chief restructuring officer, the CRO, are there no non-core functions in ESCOM wherein treasury you can begin to advise, to say, look, yes, you are doing it, but for now, put on hold. For now, reduce. For now, undo. Does ESCOM have in its cash flow projections a clear and reliable income or funding projection, inclusive of the debtors? Are they able to say, looking at Skoda mid-year, for Skoda and all, we are looking into this particular amount that you would have, you know, recouped from our debtors? And lastly, Chair, I don't have many questions today. what is the percentage ratio in terms of the government ESCOM shareholding? Where do you stand now? Mm-hmm. Or is it not fixed and all? Thanks, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. Now, let me start by welcoming the presentation from the DG. I think it's very something that ESCOM is very vital for the country and for the economy. However, I'll also move to second the move by, or the motion rather, by Comrade Peters, that we really need to have an engagement with ESCOM and DPD, so that we are able to ask certain questions. Some of us are very detailed in terms of understanding process, and I think that some of these questions that we might have, Treasury might not necessarily be able to respond to. Such questions like, in slide 3, we are stating that we are requesting this special appropriation to service the debt. On the very same slide, we are raising ESCOM's financial challenges. And one such challenge is the delay in the build progress, which leads to cost escalation. Now the question that will come there is ESCOM in a position to indicate interim measures to contain such costs in the interim, whilst we're still looking at a final turnaround strategy, or if you want to call it a restructuring strategy? And the second question would be, how are these costs likely to impact on the future financial needs of ESCOM? Because I'm sitting with the view that the more costs are escalating, the more money ESCOM is going to need. Hence, I'm supporting the view by other members that ESCOM must come before us, so that we are able to probe further. Unlike taking this reality that you are putting in slide 3, with a possibility that we'll have another engagement of this nature, asking for more money to be able to service this escalating cost, which we're in a position to hold if we engage at that level. Chair, the second one, which would be the last one, because most of the questions have been raised by other members. It's on the rate at which our state-owned entities is losing CEOs. I'm raising this because Eskom as well has lost over 12 in the past 10 years, if I'm not mistaken. Now, we are celebrating the fact that we have appointed a chief restructuring officer. And in my view, to a certain extent, the role and responsibilities of a chief restructuring officer will border along the lines of the roles and responsibilities of CEOs, which in the main will be developing long-term, even short-term strategies. Now, the question that I have for Treasury, I don't think you'll be able to respond. Have we considered the reasons that would have led to the resignation of this particular former CEOs? Could it be interference by us politicians? Could it be interference by board members? Could there be other issues that the CEOs were not necessarily able to absorb and stomach in their role trying to turn Eskom around? Now the question would be, have we considered this and maybe to a certain extent created a barrier that will be able to protect Freeman, the appointed chief restructuring officer, so that he's able to execute his mandate without fear of him? Because for me that is very, very important. If we are losing CEOs, we are likely to have a restructuring officer who is not going to stay in step and fail in his mandate. So I just wanted to check the particular one, Chair. I will rest. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members. DG, I hear my colleagues keep on saying you may not be able to answer these questions. They need DPE and ESCOM. They may be correct, but nevertheless, we still ask them from you, because from where I'm seated, these are the type of questions that you should have asked them when they came begging for money. So if you can't answer that, it's fine. But I'm saying that's the assumption from which I'm moving from. I'm not going to follow your slides, but we Eskom had a loss of about 20 billion rand this year, and that was definitely around more than 85% deterioration in terms of profitability. Of Eskom. What really happened in 1 year that we could deteriorate at a rate of about 85% between 2018 and 2019? Two, what is the impact of the financial impact of the IPPs, the agreements that we got into, in the financial viability of Eskom? Do we know what the impact of that is? If we could be taken on board on that. DG, there are SOCs which I think have been at your door for the past 2 years. Others not even asking for recapitalization, but asking for guarantees. If I'm not mistaken, they haven't had any. One of them would be SABC. And then there is a view out there that in some of the SOCs we have got those who have the breadwinner status. We are coming for a special appropriation again, and those SOCs, for instance, were even looking for even much lesser amount from yourselves. And I'll talk about SABC in this instance. What exactly is the criteria that we use to try and say this one we can save, this one we can't? We can't save. You know the breadwinner status, blue-eyed boy, blue-eyed girl, of National Treasury. Can you please take us into what's the governance structure of Eskom? And I would like to hear how do they relate to each other. There are some committees, there's a board, CRO and so on. How are they going to be working? You know that sometimes not very well understood governance structures can perhaps in some instances result in the problems that Honorable Matafa alluded to. But I just say the governance structure, how is it working, and how is the governance structure helping us to resolve the problems of ESCOM. A concern that I think I would like to raise, or perhaps even to underline and bold, which has been raised by Honorable Rivers, is the question of the plans. If you look at the presentation, most of the things which are here are very much futuristic. We'll do this, and so on. As if the problems of ESCOM have just mushroomed yesterday. We don't hear what exactly has happened so far. I think we need to know that, DG, that what has happened, what has ESCOM done so far to try and deal with this problem. Because this problem has been there, at least South Africans have been aware of it, if I want to be nice, for the past 2 years, and the structures that we're putting on and so on and so forth. So exactly what has happened? While we are waiting for the grand plan and so on, but we'd like to know what has happened between then and now to try and deal with these problems. This talks to, for instance, to amongst other things, the 20 billion rand deterioration in the profitability of ESCOM within 12 months. So I think it's one area that we must look at. Related to the governance thing, I may be wrong. I think ESCOM, government, and the country in general were putting so much reliance on the CRO. The problems that are there all of a sudden are going to be solved by the CRO. I think we're giving him so much burden. And I think with the best of intentions, there is no one who will be able to deal with the problems of the magnitude of ESCOM in a year. You know, to deal with a company as complex as ESCOM, first and foremost, you must understand it. How long does it take for everybody, the geniuses that you may be having, to understand what is happening at ESCOM, let alone to start identifying the problems that ESCOM has, let alone coming up with the solutions to ESCOM? So, DG, I know that government has been saying this. When we waited for the CRO was going to be appointed, is appointed now. And there's so much expectation. I'm afraid that come next year, when ESCOM comes and announces its annual financial results, the CRO is still trying to understand the magnitude of and the complexity of that organization. So I'm just saying, I may be wrong, but I think there's so much reliance that we are placing on the CRO. Let me tell you the danger that again that creates. As soon as you have got executives who have been there for ages at ESCOM, you know what they do when they say, well, looks like we're not that very important. The CRO is there. He's going to deal with all the problems. And the first thing, and what they end up doing, they don't support the CRO. And that's why I started with the relationship of the governance structure. For instance, if I was the CEO of ESCOM, and you start hearing the CRO, what's the relationship of the CRO to me as the CEO of this organization? I think those are the things, those are real governance structures. So I would like to hear your comment. I'm saying, aren't we putting too much burden on the CRO to come to this organization, identify, understand the organization for starters, and then start understanding exactly where the problems are, and then come up with solutions? So I'm one person. I'm very pessimistic. I know that people we've got different gifts, but I don't think that individuals who have got all the solutions. But I'm just saying that whenever a problem comes, see, we've appointed a CRO, I think it's something that when they come, perhaps let me talk to the honourable members. DPE and ESCOM are already on our program. On the 10th of September, 10 o'clock, briefing us. Remember, talking about that, we are very clear from the word go that there is no way we can finish this process without engaging and involving ESCOM and DPE. So they'll definitely be coming. Perhaps it helps us to, it also helps them to, for us to raise these problems, because they must prepare the answers for them. If you can't answer them, say, you need to answer these things. Economic speak talks about moral hazard or time inconsistent. What basically that means is that in the years, you know, they're too big to fail, and that's the mode that sometimes some of our SOCs are in, that, well, they'll never allow us to fail. So we can always go to the DG, Department of Finance, and they provide money because they understand our importance. So from our side, as a shareholder, how are we dealing with that? The risk of moral hazard getting to our SOCs, but in particular, as called. Honorable Peters touched on this one. We also wanted to be taken on board as far as the major contracts of ESCOM and especially those of coal supply, which we are told some of them have got very, very long time span. So if you talk about this, the social contract that we should get into, we haven't heard coming from ESCOM or coming from the executive saying what has been the engagement with those companies, right? Because if things don't go right at ESCOM, it means their profitability is going not just going to decrease. It won't be there if ESCOM fails. So what is it that they're bringing to the table? Right? So we need to know that those type of contracts, which borders on being evergreen contracts, 40-year contracts, and so on. What is the impact? What are they doing in this a problem that we're facing there? We'll wait for what's going to come out, the reconfiguration of ESCOM. But I think we'd like to be given some certain features of that reconfiguration by now. If there's a paper that's going to come out, I think we would like to know what are the science features of it, of that reconfiguration. And when we talk about it and say, how are they helping, how is that helping us to alleviate the problems that we are facing? Obviously, that assumes the question of some savings. Where are we going to have efficiency gains as when the reconfiguration comes? Because you usually, You'll get people talking about efficiency gains and so on. When they talk about mergers and acquisitions, that's why we'll start having one HR, we'll start having one CFO, we'll start having this and so on. We are doing the opposite. So I'm sure we've looked into that, but I'm sure if we can be taken into confidence as to what are certain features of the reconfiguration plan that we're talking about. Did I talk about the IPPs? No. Yeah, I think let's also know the impact of the IPPs on the financial viability of ESCOM. What does that mean? So we are giving you this menu, DG. Please talk to us about those that you can. But those which need ESCOM and DPE, definitely would like them to answer us on these things. You can't have everything being futuristic after we have been in this mode for about 2 years. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair. I'm smiling because the problem with the Chair is that he was the Deputy Minister of Finance, and he knows we would not engage ESCOM on these questions that he's posing, or DPE for that matter. So we can have, and we are having, scanned sort of views and responses to some of the questions. But I think mainly, I think one welcomes the point that the committee is making, that says we need DPE and our ESCOM come in and actually address. And Chair, I think maybe with respect, we should also be requested to avail ourselves and be part to the 10th of September meeting, so that you get the fuller benefit and explanation, and we can explain further. And if the information is not the same, we are able to explain further here and there in terms of what's happening. It is worrying because the percentage rate of escalation of ESCOM debt is actually what it is, 10%. If you just look at it, I mean, last year, end of last year, we had what, 400 billion. Now the projection is 446. So it's around 10.2%, somewhere there. That's worrying because, and that is as a result of obviously the load tariffs. And why am I saying load tariffs? Because it's simply specifically for how ESCOM and ERSA calculated and used the 23 billion and built it in. It's for that. I'm not talking about the full range of how over the years, but it's just that how, and that's why I say low tariff or tariff calculation as part of the determination that was made. When ESCOM thought the 23 billion would be seen separate, NERSA used it as part of, so that basically put them off, and that's why the need for an injection or the need for their own liquidity escalated overnight, basically, because of the way this was calculated. And that's something that obviously they've been having an issue with ESCOM. Now, I'll take it from the back. The impact of IPPs. Look, IPPs, the reality at the time when the signed, when the signatures were put on paper some time ago on the last round, ESCOM at the time was saying, but look, this is unaffordable. And yet the independent power producer, the contracts were already entered into. All that was left was to sign. That's why at the time, 18 months or 2 years ago, we were talking about uncertainty because ESCOM is not signing and so on. It was the flavor of the moment at the time among investors and many. But the issue was that what then they were putting their signature on, agreed some time ago, it took long to, was that, you know, the cost per kilowatt hour was far more than what ESCOM said they could afford, and because they thought it should be cheaper. And there was an issue about do we sign at the time or do we renegotiate, etc. But obviously at the time, you know, the Department of Energy and ESCOM approached and DPE approached this differently, which then immediately had an impact on, and the question was, what about the IPP's impact? There was impact, obviously, in terms of how much ESCOM is paying per kilowatt hour before they sell it off. SOCs were in the door. Many of them, Chair, the criteria is simple. The Minister of Finance by law, in terms of the PFMA, has got certain authorities. And what section is that? Guarantees. Section 63 of the PFMA. Give authority to the Minister of Finance to issue guarantees. Then in assisting the Minister of Finance, the machinery in the Treasury then has got a subcommittee called the Fiscal Liability Committee that's chaired by the DDG responsible for assets and liabilities. I don't even sit in that committee as DG. But recommendations are made to myself and the Minister and Deputy Minister to determine whether to give a guarantee to an entity or not. A guarantee by definition means I, as the guarantor, or as the, you know, I will, if entity X is are not able to repay or are not able to pay back, I will come in. And we give a guarantee because we believe that in terms of their business operation, this entity should be able to generate money in order to repay. And in that way, the liability is contingent and it may not be caught. That's the whole rationale, whether you give a guarantee or not give a guarantee. So sometimes, because of need and urgency and impact, and essentially what may be an impact that can bring everyone down, like we've done in the last few years, we started with SAA a few years ago and give them 10 billion rand to because we are basically giving them 10 billion to repay matured loans from Standard Chartered and Citi at the time. irrespective of what the FLC would recommend, that no, don't give a guarantee because they will not be able to repay back. So then we give based on the impact and the need. So you always weigh at any given point in time the impact that will have. Now, I don't want to go into details, Chair, with the details of the SABCs and examples that you gave and other, but the issues were obviously separate and the issues are complex in nature, where clear demonstration of this pipeline of ability to repay, ability to collect, ability to raise more money cannot necessarily be seen. And there's a letter that we can make available to the committee on SABC in particular, that both the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Public Enterprise, now Minister of Communications and Technologies, I forgot the actual name of the department, where we can make it available, and it was issued to the SABC yesterday, where the joint letter where all of the issues are listed out. So there are no blue-eyed or blue-eyed girls in the way we look at entities. It's essentially this team of financial analysts who are not political, who don't even look at the politics, who are just looking at the finances. Is this entity able to repay or not? Does it make sense to? Or we can then take a decision that says, instead of a guarantee, we can also give ESCOM bailout, because by giving, look at it, ESCOM has got a guarantee room of about 350 billion rand. They only use 250, they still have a room to get into the market, but they're not able to. So we give them cash. Same as SAA. SAA has been bringing down their guarantee from 20 billion to around 11 or so now. They still have a room. They are not able to go into the market because no one believes their story. We have to give them cash. Same as Denel. Denel, but then we took a decision, and Minister of Finance said it about a year ago during the budget, February. We have to, which is a good sign for rating agencies. We have to bring our contingent liability down, which is a good sign. If a well-functioning state, a well-functioning government, management of public finance will mean, if your guarantees as contingent liabilities are small, it's a good positive thing. So we are doing that. We have to continuously weigh whether we give guarantees or not. The governance structure at ESCOM, one wants to believe that there is a board, there is management, there are various board committees, etc., which should function like any business. Or in corporate. We expect that that's in place. There's also a relationship with the shareholder. The shareholder in this case is government, represented by Department of Public Enterprise. One expects that relationship and that should work. Where in instances the shareholder must be approached, in instances the shareholder must play their role in terms of appointing board members, making sure, and the board must appoint the CEO and management. That we believe if that breaks, then the system has got a potential to fall apart. And that talks to the issues around, what's happening at the entity in terms of are they able to manage, is the board in charge, is the CRO in charge, is the interference, which I guess and subject to any other person's understanding as to what the issues are, but where I'm seated and what we have to ensure is that the board maintains, they've got fiduciary responsibilities that must be maintained at all given point in time. There's management, there's CFO, treasurer, group treasurer, both in ESCOM and also in some other state-owned companies, and that we think should be. Yes, Chair, the plans are futuristic, most of them, because currently, the current ESCOM is not sustainable. The current ESCOM, we have to, and I said in my presentation earlier, we have to continuously ask ourselves, what kind of an ESCOM do you want to see tomorrow? So that we're able to see far in terms of a new ESCOM. And if one is to ask, what is then our view of what a new ESCOM? We envisage an ESCOM that is debt-free, or that can manage its debt. We envisage an ESCOM that is able to be self-sustainable. We manage an ESCOM that is able to generate electricity at much cheaper cost and pass it on to consumers and contribute to the function of the economy. Now, that's the kind of ESCOM, but if its profitability and its business model is the way it is now, then clearly we have a problem. We are not necessarily putting all the reliance in the CRO. We see and we view the CRO as an office. It's not humanly possible. ESCOM is too complex. ESCOM is too big. There are many facets. You need debt specialists, you need lawyers, you need coal engineers, you need structural engineers, you need civil engineers. You need a whole lot of people to make the business work, and most of those people are there. So if you are fixing and if you are restructuring or if you are reconfiguring the enterprise, it means you need a consolidation of that skill. ESCOM had a turnaround strategy that they had agreed with the board. By December they had that. And the elements, and we, on the 10th of September, we should actually even ask them to come and present the turnaround strategy because it's there. And from where they sit, maybe you can see, as at 10th of December, what was your plan? What were you intending to do? The turnaround strategy has got various components, one of which is an injection from the government. That's why you have them talking about debt takeover by government of anything between 100 billion, 120 billion or more. Second turnaround strategy was also modeled around cost containment, meaning you exit people. You exit people. And that's what ESCOM was saying at the time. The turnaround and many other two or three other broad components that we can tease out further on the 10th of September. Now, based on that, the implementation over the weekend, obviously get the details, and in our engagements with them, government is saying, hey, we don't have 120 billion that we can give you. If you remember when they were on a roadshow in New York, we heard about it for the first time when they were on a roadshow in December. They were in London. I remember even phoning the chair at the time and saying, I'm picking up in the news that you are saying government is going to be taking over 120 billion rand of debt. Let's be serious. So he said, no, we are just mentioning it at the time. But formally then they came to us and said, but we actually meant it. Then there was a need that says, how then do we look at ESCOM's debt in a way that we take it serious, because we have to take implications of what the debt holders are, what the current lenders are saying, what will it mean, what the difference between guaranteed and unguaranteed debt. All of that must be, you cannot, I as DG or a treasurer, we cannot simply make a loose statement that says we are going to take over ESCOM debt. The key question becomes, some investor who's got ESCOM bonds, 40, 50 billion rand worth of ESCOM debt, will phone and say, mine was guaranteed, or other one will say, mine is not guaranteed. What's the status? Who's going to be benefit here? And there are other speculative investors out there who wait and pick and choose. So it's not easy to just talk about debt restructuring in ESCOM space. It's more complicated than simply that. Then you obviously need specialists to help you understand the implications for bondholders, implications for ESCOM's rating, implications for the sovereign. Effectively, what it means is that if you take over debt, it, as much as Moody's and others have calculated already the contingent liabilities in our debt, but then it becomes reality. Your debt to GDP, 60.8% debt to GDP that we articulated in February, already increases. Now, the reality is exactly that. We have just put in 26 billion by this request to the committee. We're not going to cut budget now to address this 26 billion or 1920 request, because the budgets were set up already in February. It will be irresponsible midstream in October to say all of a sudden we are cutting the education budget by 40% to take care of ESCOM's new debt. It will be irresponsible. It's going to destabilize the system. We are known to do it systematically. If we do it, we go to February budget, we announce. We go to October budget, we announce estimates for the following year, including addressing some in-year adjustments. That's why it's called the adjustment budget. So but you're not going to be reckless and just cutting because you're covering. Effectively, it means your debt is going to be affected by at least 26 billion new, which was not there in February. So already, we're talking a new amount that talks to your debt. Now, the office is expected, and we can tease it further on the 10th. as to the actual terms of reference. Chair, you are right. There are salient features of the reconfiguration that we have penned onto paper, and as I jokingly was saying, you were there with us at some point. The reality is that we would say to ESCOM, we'd say to DPE, you cannot just put a bill on the table. What do you want to do? How do you give effect to the statement by the president? What are the features of what you say? Now, all of that is in place, and I think, Chair, without even trying to attempt to indicate what those silent features are, 10 days is not far, about 12 days from now. Let's wait for that, so that these silent features or the components of what DPE and ESCOM is putting together, that we engage at the time, so that we systematically take the discussion forward in a way that builds this. Now, I don't know the reason for the resignation of the CEOs. I mean, these are, we don't ask, but what is important, we have to ensure, because what rating agents, other lenders, as we engage, other investors, bondholders, they worry if there's issues of governance. And this can also be an issue where governance, insofar as ESCOM, is not static, is that there's movements, whether it's the board, whether it's management, CEOs, etc. So we can only, insofar as plead for departments, agencies, government as a whole, authorized shareholders in this case, to ensure that there's certainty in the governance arrangements and framework. So I don't want to speculate as to what the reasons were, but it is important that we note the issues of governance. Now, the recovery plan, municipal debt is a very sensitive matter. My view would have simply been, and we proposed this, but we know we get pushback all the time, slice the equitable share. Some municipality which is very small, some revenue generating capacity is almost zero, relying on equitable share and some conditional grants, owing ESCOM big amounts and you cut it. You are already affecting basic service delivery in that particular municipality. There's one municipality in the Free State, I forgot which one exactly, maybe MP will remember, that's owing ESCOM 3 billion rand. Not only ESCOM, it's also owing Water Board, almost a similar amount. We can easily just go and slice them equitable share by numbers and then cut it them. But then, you obviously, in our discussions with SALGA, you have got that issue. So what you want to do, you want to approach this carefully. It makes sense that you put some responsibility on the other side. And maybe even if you cut, maybe let's cut, let's slice it up, but in a phased manner with amounts that are manageable and checked. But I take it as an advice from the committee. We obviously have to look at that. But I know we are in discussions with COCTA and SALGA on this matter in terms of how do we deal with municipalities owing ESCOM. Departments owing ESCOM, I've written to my counterparts everywhere in government. I said, colleagues, pay up. And with them, I can tell the committee, now I'm going to slice up the money. I'm going to take it to pay ESCOM. Because it's not, if Treasury is owing rates and taxes and all, they're owing ESCOM, I mean, Swan, or they're owing something, no, it doesn't make sense. As an accounting officer, hold me accountable. Why am I not paying municipality? No, actually, I should be fired because I'm not managing the finances properly. So, again, I'll be going back to my colleagues on this and reminding them of various letters I've written to them. We've done the same with provinces, and that DGs in province should do the same, that there's no excuse as to why government departments should be. Now, when some of them come back to me and say, but no, we are disputing the bill, I said, okay, pay what you are not disputing. Let's talk about it. Maybe I'm taking as an instructive suggestion from, I must just act like how SARS do it and just take the money, we'll talk later, but maybe we'll have to exercise that with other departments. And the key question is, and I think it's important, and that for me, not that issues, Chair, are not important, but the key issue for me, the takeaway is that, where are these draft conditions? And I said, it's one thing to put money in a hole, and we cannot. Balancing these conditions vis-à-vis the financial obligations that must be met by ESCOM to its investors, to its, you know, to its suppliers, to its employees. I can say, before I give you money, implement your turnaround strategy. They say, okay, we'll implement it. Our turnaround strategy says you must exit maybe, what, 16,000 people? I'm exiting them now, and then I'll be able to meet you. We can do that. We can come up with some real stringent measures that talk to those kind of issues. Or we can come with measures, and I'm going to read a few of these, Chair. I've got them. They were still basically strengthening them. We say to them, additional funding should be used to pay off financial obligations, to pay off debt and interest first, and not pay bonuses like another member was suggesting, that we hope they are not doing that. No, it's a condition that as we give you money, you can only pay off debt and pay interest, and we want to see demonstration of that. And if you require funding for other operations, they must seek our approval first. If they want to use the 20 or the 49 billion for whatever reason other than this, they must then come to us, and we can engage based on approval. We want ESCOM to submit a board-approved annual schedule of redemptions and interest payments, so that we know. Remember, ESCOM's book is big, so we want to see a schedule of redemption. By redemptions, I mean ESCOM bonds over time are coming to an end. We need to know that schedule. We need to know when they must be paying who by when, including interest payment, so that you are not bluffed in a way that they begin to repay some of their interest. We want them to continue having daily reporting on their liquidity position with National Treasury and public enterprises. Daily, which they are doing already, by the way. And we want to put it as a condition that we want to see, because remember, every mistake that happens can trigger a real serious act of default, and that's an implication on us as a treasury not having managed the finances properly. We've got a very effective cash management office housed in the ALM division. These people, that's their business. Daily take cash flow, big looking at screens on an ongoing basis as to the movements of cash between departments, between ourselves and among. So we want them to report on their operations. We want us come to close or to sell the ESCOM finance company. They are sitting with a 10 plus or so, 9, 10 billion loan book there. We are saying ESCOM should not, and they are not in the business of running a financial operation. Basically loans, giving loans to staff and so on. So we're saying they can sell that off to somebody who does that for a living and not them. And then we can recoup that money, put the 10 billion back into operations, and we've got a lesser burden to address and deal with. We also want them to publish this turnaround strategy as soon as it's approved. I mean, it's a soft condition, but it's important that all of us can see this turnaround strategy, can understand, and everyone can engage with it once it has gone through the processes. We want ESCOM to submit monthly management reports that are signed off by the GCO and GCFO, Group CFO and Group C. Now, you may think, this is minor, but I can tell you, in a big operation like ESCOM, management reports become critical and necessary. We want to engage with it. We've got a team of people sitting with us who should actually live and understand what's happening in ESCOM on a daily basis. Okay, I did mention, daily reporting, liquidity position. I want proof, which is something easy, that the company is tax compliant. Again, this is soft, but you can imagine. What do I mean by tax compliant? Some state-owned companies use a new trend, and it's worrying. Because on one hand, they are weakening SARS by not paying over tax, pay as you earn. Some entities started doing that, and it's wrong, and want to ensure that at any given point in time that they are tax compliant and they are able to pay due. They must continue having quarterly performance engagements with public enterprise and ourselves, monthly updates, I said that, and set up a steering committee that reports on the reorganization of ESCOM on an ongoing basis, and we need this on a quarterly basis in terms of progress. Now, you one can argue, and colleagues are busy developing that, so we don't help them, and we have not publish them and say these are the conditions, and it's work in progress, and I'm happy that honorable members see this process as starting at the head, which helps, because I view this is the head, this is the beginning of the process, and it's going to continue. You can be called anytime, you have to report, you have to write back to the committee, respond. So I thought I would spend a little bit of time just raising some of the conditions that we have been working through, and but there will be more stringent ones, one can imagine. That's why I say some of them would be, but it doesn't mean that ESCOM's redemptions are not coming due this year. It doesn't mean that operations of ESCOM are not on the army. That's why I said we have to balance this all the time at any given point in time. Now, there were good times in ESCOM, no doubt, early days. There were good times, they were all happy, but the good times in 1998, there was a study done by the World Bank that says, hey, in 10 years' time, if you don't do anything about your energy security, you may have a challenge. It took 10 years for South Africans to realize in 2008, 2009, around the same time, and that's why it was not in your face type at the time, because we are dealing with global financial crisis, where the cracks started showing in ESCOM, both from an operational point of view, and that's when, if you remember, we changed our loan equity. 60 billion rand at the time, 2009. It was around the same time when we got to the World Bank and we were negotiating the $3.75 billion loan. It was around the same time because clearly the cracks were showing in ESCOM. It was around the same time, 3 years later, in 2011, 12, 13, those years, that we gave ESCOM 23 billion from sale of Vodacom shares. The cracks were beginning to show. The discussion at the time was that get your house in order. But what is not a secret to all of us in South Africa, if you live in South Africa and a South African, you will understand when you hear them, evidence is coming through now in the Zondo Commission around the impact that and the challenge that ESCOM faced over a number of years. Now, that's subject to public scrutiny in terms of what happened there and so on, and the board and the deterioration of finances, which culminated into the crisis that we found ourselves in. And then government finally and lenders. Remember what happened in October of 2017. October 2017, lenders, South African lenders and international investors came and said, thank you South Africa government, finance department, treasury. It was good doing business with you. We will not anymore be engaged with ESCOM. And within certain things changed at the time. And yeah, we saw liquidity challenges in ESCOM until government then was faced to make tough decisions of December 2017. So this is all news. It's all in the archives now. The new board was, and the chair is right, that in the last 2 years we've seen changes. Are these benefits? Can we show what we have done? And I think ESCOM should be able to actually give details as to what has been happening, including the board, because this current board has at least been operating from January or December 2017. They've been in there. So they should be able to say, what have you done in taking change the company around? They always say, we've got a turnaround strategy. We are doing this and that. But again, that's where the 10th of September discussion comes handy. Now, I'm chair. If one remember things, it's an announcement. It's not an announcement. I mean, maybe it was misunderstood. At no point did government announce or treasury announce that, as I'm saying now, I said the same context, and I started saying it in Netflix, and I said it in a newspaper interview, and I'm saying it again today, that let's understand that we are in trouble, South Africans. Let's understand that we are in trouble. Let's understand that we have to impose some harshness on ourselves and some sacrifice. That's all I'm saying. If it means earning a little bit less, let's do that to save ourselves and the country and the state. Now, there's many arguments. People say, they're stealing and so on. It's fine. I'm from a school of thought that says, don't budget on the basis of stolen money or corruption. You can argue and say there's 100 billion rand of corruption. I'm not going to sacrifice. Fine. Let the law enforcement agents deal with corruption. But what I'm faced with today is the issue of the national treasury. And I did say the treasure box is empty. And I mean it. And the numbers are shown. And I'm saying to the committee and to other committees in Parliament that we are in trouble. We have to continuously bail out state-owned companies. We have to be hard on ourselves. Restructuring must be accelerated. DPE must come to the party. ESCOM must come to the party. As South Africans, let's be hard on ourselves. Paid services, business take a little bit less, government play a role, be decisive, act fast, and labor. Maybe. And this is, I know it's outside network processes, Chair. And I'm saying, and that's why my point was, let's go and kneel down. And that's what didn't come out. Let's kneel to labor and say, let's take in confidence on the challenges. Can our members, can senior executives, DGs, etc., should definitely take a bigger cut anyway. We should. But let's be soft on the low earners. Let's be soft on the working class, if you have to now talk about class. But the reality, the point is not that, that's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is that we are in trouble. We have to find alternative ways. And it could be many, and this is just one of the ways. So I was not making any announcement, but I know it's out of order. But the reality, the point that is important is that we are in trouble. Now, lack of policy direction in the policy sector, all we are saying is that it is not, yeah, it is lack because currently people are saying, where is this ESCOM strategy? The president in the reply to the State of the Nation address mentioned the paper. Where is it? And that's the pressure I'm putting on to Department of Public Enterprises, and I'm happy now we've got a date. September. They said September 2019. I know that we're working hard. Our teams in Treasury and the team in DP are flat out directed by the CRO. What I've done, and I'm trying to get details, I know I've signed. Chair, you're right. ESCOM is too complicated. And even for the Treasury, the kind of expertise we have, I don't think we have to get extra assistance. I've just signed off the other day, late last week, Friday. Through a proper process, I've just signed off some new assistants, specialized focus assistants, high quality experts in both energy, construction and finance, corporate finance, to help me as a treasurer understand what's happening in ESCOM. Because that's the issue. So it's not easy, but we have to get deeper because some questions as some models are too complicated, and we obviously have to. And my understanding can be limited. The understanding of the capacity of officials who play an oversight role on ESCOM may be limited also. We have to continuously do that. And one expects that the CRO, the DP process will take that into account, and all efforts being put together for good use to turn the entity around. Now, coal contracts going to major companies. Members, I think that may be the reality now, and that is ESCOM and public enterprise to make sure that one, there's more players in the sector; two, that we get good quality coal that can make our turbine to work much longer. Because if you get bad quality coal, it affects the turbine; they break, and use coal. Siemens come, they repair. Somebody comes, you have a problem, and it's ongoing. And those are some of the cost escalations. The quality of coal that's coming through is of concern. And so the ESCOM is continuously have to ensure that we get them. The private sector, obviously, and that's the call I made to them, that if there's only 2 or 3% or how many percent, 90% of you or 80, whatever percentage, in rebuilding ESCOM and answering issues, you have to assist here. What do you bring to the table in rebuilding? And I become philosophical, Chair, because it's quite an emotional issue in South Africa, where we come from as a country, the history. We are 25 years in democracy. Some democracies are 300-400 years old. They perfected these. We are making mistakes as we move along, as we develop, etc. And we have to make sacrifices along. It cannot be government and other people make sacrifices. Business has to come. Big companies, big multinationals, big companies have to come in ensuring that we build this country together to become what you want. Because if we fail on ESCOM, everyone fails. And this is basically my approach. Now, the DMR and feedstock minerals to be extracted much is a much, I see it as a bigger policy discussion between ourselves and energy and DBM, GPE and so on. And I think some of our members are right to direct us there, you know. But it's much, much a bigger discussion around what we should be doing. Chair, so I did talk about conditions in the municipal debt I mentioned, sustainability, so departments not being ESCOM I dealt with. Yes, I think I've tried to summarize. I know it's not, I didn't satisfy, but my notes are very clear. And some of the information that's outstanding, we obviously have to bring it in on the 10th, and that's why I invite myself and my team to that meeting so that we can have a thorough engagement and discussion. Thank you.
Thank you so much, DG. Honourable members, I'm very lenient today. I want to give you a second bite. There are things which might have come up, or some of them you might have been constrained. One question per honourable member, and then allow the DG to, if you have to, if not, it's okay. Again, we'll have an engagement with the DPE and ESCOM on the 10th of September. Let me hear who's beginning to say something. Honourable Khalil.
Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Sorry. Let me just recognise Honourable Peters. So it's 1-2.
Thank you very much, okay. Chairperson. I don't know whether I will be in order. Mine is not a question. It's just an advice. I am seated here thinking about the burden that ESCOM is having, and also your department. That in my province where I come from, the sun is free, even in winter. So maybe we can switch over to using solar energy on some of the provinces like where I come from. Just an advice.
Thank you very much, DG. Making reference to the challenges of 2008-2009, reminds me of the massive program that ESCOM launched called 49M, that time when South Africa's population was estimated to be at 49 million, indicating that all of us have got a responsibility towards making sure that the lights stay on. I just want to find out from you, because it had serious financial injections. And there was also initiatives from the side of ESCOM where everybody was brought on board with the understanding. There was even a terminology used that everybody can make a difference, or you can make a difference in terms of making sure that the households were being retrofitted with solar water heating systems. And there was also the initiative driven by DTI to say that companies must reduce their energy consumption to this level, and the Ministry of Economic Development launched the Green Economy Strategy, which was informed by all other factors, but included in it was the issues related to energy efficiency and demand-side management initiatives. I just want to know what happened to all that, because it was a way of inculcating a sense of responsibility onto corporate as well as a general public. And I remember there was also a grant from Treasury for companies. There was an identification. Honorable Khalid, that those who retrofit, including companies where they've got these massive warehouses with enough rooftop sizes. I have seen some companies now, even their carports being solar generating spots. But does it mean when we don't have a crisis on our hands, then everything goes back to the normal? But also the the interventions of that EETSM was intended to also take on board the young people in terms of training to make it possible that they can be installers of some of these things. I'm asking this because it is of interest related to the issues you raised about the lower than budgeted for tariffs that NERSA gave, because NERSA clawed back from the side of the renewable, not renewable, the energy efficiency demand side management resource. So I just wanted to find out, I know that we did say that we will get ESCOM, but because it had serious roles in terms of from the side of finance, I would have thought that you would have put more emphasis on that particular side for everybody, because there were incentives also tax-wise for many who were retrofitting. Thank you very much.
Before you come in, DG, I think one thing I just want to throw in is that I think we also need to get the Department of Minerals and Energy, because this thing of the feedstock, the coal, and the quality of coal which goes to ESCOM is an issue. It's an issue and so on. And in any case, we're dealing with an energy, maybe a DPE matter, but all what we are funding energy, we'll see when we get minerals and energy to join. DG, do you mind responding to some of the things?
No, thank you very much. I can say the same with Honorable Peters, you know. She got me clearly these are issues that were relevant when I remember the 49M campaign, early days, and it was fashionable to talk about retrofitting, it was fashionable to talk about energy saving devices and bulbs and demand side management issues. But we seem to have not abandoned, because the program was successful, there was sufficient awareness created at the time of the reason and the need to approach energy in the way we did. But then I think if you look at the spending patterns from that time to now, and maybe when we have details, we can also, just as part of feedback, give it to you when I've got details in front of me. The solar water heater program was a failure by any magnitude. Billions over the years remained unspent in this particular program. I'm talking about the whole budget, just the solar heater program. If I remember, and I'll get the details, ESCOM, if you think about it, they steal about 1.2 billion rand that they never used for the solar heater program. And yet there's sun everywhere. So, and one believes, and one wants to believe that the new ESCOM will have to go to the fundamentals. And that talks to the Department of Energy and the Department of Minerals Resources. Where are we at in terms of our energy mix? How do you maximize solar? How do you maximize other energy mixes? Whether it's gas, whether it's any nuclear, whether it's everything, we have to openly talk about this. And the IRP obviously, has to come, and we will get guidance and policy direction. Where are we going with the green energy stuff? And so. The fundamentals of going to the program, maybe we'll have to do the same, so that we create the same. The hype at the time was around the backdrop of the load shedding, and everyone was worried. And as soon as we're able to get extra kilowattage of the IPV program started running, we all forgot the kind of things that we're talking about. So we will obviously, ask as part of the preparation for the temp, maybe say more about the 49M weight, and then where are we at? What happened with the solar heater program? Because clearly that money was allocated. And the bigger question is, what do we do? And we have to, the IRP must address this. What do we do with excess capacity that's generated from homes, from businesses? Do we send it back off the grid? What the future of energy obviously is something that I think has to get. Then if you talk about ESCOM sustainability, when you get more people off the grid, what about ESCOM? Will ESCOM have excess capacity? All of these questions must be answered. We have a schedule. ESCOM has got a schedule of the current fleet that they have. When is it coming to end of life? When, you know, we all know that. So how we synchronize the end of life vis-a-vis new energy sources is also, and these are, this energy must answer for this, including ESCOM and their plans. When we say you've got, you know, dirty coal is affecting people in the Mpumalanga province, what is the source of future energy? What kind of energy do you want? It calls for urgent, critical debate, still looking at the sustainability of ESCOM. So, Chair, I cannot overemphasize the quality of coal. This is an issue and it remains a challenge. So we will be more than happy to come back, and it will be maybe good that DMR and Department of Energy is also part of the conversation, and ESCOM and DP at the appropriate levels for us to engage on these matters. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, DG. I think we are much wiser, and I can see that you are becoming an energy specialist these days. I know the unfortunate thing about being a national treasurer is that you become a bearer of bad news. I think now you must develop a strategy of when you come to these committees, let's go, so that they can come and answer questions for themselves. And you, I know at the time the problem child was SAA. When we had to go to whatever committee and talk about the bailout, I think we did a $5 billion bailout and invoked Section 16 of the PFMA. It's not an easy thing for the minister in national treasurer. It's not an easy thing for the officials, for the DG, because you must go and explain on behalf of other people. I think strategically and tactically speaking, I think when these things come up, it will be strategic for you to say, Madot and Bo Mama, let's go and face the committees and parliament, because whenever these things of recapitalization of these institutions come up, they become very emotive and very complex, and they raise all types of questions and emotions, so we understand. But I think one remembers, as far as this matter is concerned, it's we've had a very informed discussion. Thank you so much, DG and your team.
Honourable Member,
I think we're very efficient with our time today. The committee meeting stands adjourned. Thank you so much.